Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to an impromptu, energized, over-caffeinated edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained procrastination in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister is good for the economy because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is Paul Carruthers. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinny. How are you doing?
I'm good. And for those of you who don't know, Paul has been a great supporter and an exposer of scumbaggery on behalf of Alan Hubbard, who is touted in the media as quote-unquote disgraced financier, Alan Hubbard, when in actual fact he was the victim of a conspiracy by the government, a serious fraud office, which incidentally run most of the serious frauds in this country, in order to steal his wealth and indeed, in my considered opinion, implode the Southland economy by ridding it of one of its only, business-minded and morally dictated financiers, which actually has done a massive blow, I reckon, to the Southland economy in general. So it's very important that you explain to people the truth about these matters and what actually happens, and because otherwise, the mainstream media will never let the truth get out because they're trying to protect the very establishment which committed the scumbaggery in the first place. Paul, welcome.
Thanks, Vinny. Mate, to make life really simple for people so they can get to form an understanding of why I've pushed this barrier so hard and why I think it's so important and why I think people should pay attention and take notice of what's been going on here. First and foremost, for me personally, the issue was the fact that he was 83 years old and his wife was a very similar age, that he, Alan was receiving dialysis treatment because he'd had cancer of the kidney. In fact, for the 2 years from 2008 to late 2009, the period where they're blaming him for the, the rhetoric the government have used against him on South Canterbury Finance is to the effect that he allowed the company to go out and have a big splurge on lending inappropriately on, say, over-leveraged properties or whatever, using taxpayer-funded money under the Crown Guarantee. So, in other words, when the Crown applied the guarantee to South Canterbury Finance, they just went and loaned all that money out inappropriately. But nobody ever made any mention of the fact that Alan was actually in hospital for most of that 2 years that period occurred, that his other directors were running it. These are the guys who are on the fraud charges, up on the fraud charges have been shifted sideways onto him shortly after his death. Now, no attention was ever paid to this man's physical condition, to his health, and yet, if you put it in context, what the public of New Zealand really should be thinking about here is that here you have Jock Hobbs, who died last year shortly after the Rugby World Cup. Now,
For those in the international audience, Jock Hobbs, a very famous New Zealand All Black rugby player. Sorry, go ahead, Paul.
Well, Jock Hobbs was 53 and had been diagnosed with leukemia, and the government openly stated that they were not going to investigate him with his involvement in the finance company collapse that he was a director of, because of the fact that he had leukemia and, they just felt sorry for him. So what I don't understand and what I think the public shouldn't understand either is how does that compare to Alan Hubbard's situation when the guy's 30 years older, he's had cancer as well and still in the process of recovering from it, and that resulted in the removal of one of his kidneys and ended up with him on dialysis. So How can those factors not be taken into account in his case? So this is where people should be suspicious, because there was this great big hoo-ha about this man. You know, they gave you a choice of anything between Ponzi scheme and senility as the explanation for why they needed to do this. You know, it's like what they actually did was they pushed this man off the side of they pushed this man off the side of the good ship South Canterbury Finance to create the impression that everyone needed rescuing him from him. Do you know what I mean? His investors and taxpayers, everybody needed to be rescued from this hideous old man. I mean, mate, no disrespect intended, but if Alan had been caught with his finger up a 12-year-old girl, I could understand why there was such an absolute hoo-ha about him. But the kind of rhetoric that was the kind of just onslaught that alone should have made everybody suspicious. Why was there just such a massive, massive media trial around this issue? You'd have to consider the possibility that the government needed it to be that big. They needed it to look that way in order to keep everybody's attention diverted for what they were doing behind the scenes, right? Now, whatever way you look at it, understand this, New Zealanders. A citizen of New Zealand, this is what happened to Alan Hubbard. A citizen of New Zealand and his wife, right, were put through a 15-month media trial where they were called everything from senile to fraudulent to running a Ponzi scheme, whatever, right? They had Facebook pages started up against them, you know, before the man was even charged for the crime, they had a Facebook page saying, put Alan Hubbard away. Now, the guy was 83 years old.
Mm.
And he was sick.
And the alternative left media kept calling him, like, Mr. Magoo.
Oh, you had people like Martin Bradbury and that waited till after he died and came out and sort of called him Mr. Magoo and called him a fraud. I mean, Martin Bradbury must feel like an absolute idiot now, and he is an absolute idiot. In the headlines 2 weeks ago, they're saying the money was there all along. So what does that say about Martin Bradbury's research? What does that say about the Ponzi scheme that Martin Bradbury alleges that Alan Hubbard was running? Well, it wasn't a Ponzi scheme. The money was there all along, Martin. You never even... And this is addressing... I'm actually addressing Martin Bradbury direct now. Martin, you're a dick. You never even rang Alan Hubbard up. And yet you wrote an article after he died calling him Mr. Magoo and saying it was a Ponzi scheme. You haven't got a clue what you're talking about. You're just an idiot, all right? I don't know why anybody listens to you. But that aside, what happened here, New Zealanders, is... This guy, Alan Hubbard, and his wife had their assets frozen and stripped and sold out from under them by the Crown on the basis of accusations alone, right? Now,
Can I make an interjection just here? They're getting all their assets and everything stripped off them, and they're being accused of being big money hoarders, fraudsters, and so on and so forth. Well, what is the value of their home? And what kind of car did they drive? Because when I look at fraudsters, I have to look at their home and what they drive.
Alan drove a 1960s VW Beetle. He lived in a very modest home with worn carpet and old furniture. He slept in a tubular frame single steel bed. He had one chair beside it, which he used to do his reading at night time while he was sitting on his dialysis machine. This guy lived like an absolute monk. Right, him and Jean took $750 a month drawings out of the company, and they paid themselves with that. They paid their own bills with that, and they lived a very frugal lifestyle. And everything else went back to their investors, or went to charity, or to, you know, help the community somehow. So this man was extremely philanthropic, and his philanthropy was used against him. Right, but going back over it, New Zealanders, listen. Listen, this man was accused of fraud before the investigation was even started. There's a whole lot of stuff here that you should seriously be jumping up and down about and questioning, because $1.5 billion of your money, right, has been ripped out from underneath you by John Key and his mate Bill English and their advisors, right, and all of the people they appointed to this trough. All the pigs whose nose are in the trough that John Key appointed them to here, all these people have been making money out of your taxpayer money while Alan Hubbard's been getting the blame for it. Well, understand this, right? Alan Hubbard and his wife were accused of fraud before an investigation into fraud was even started. Now, that should have been the first warning sign to absolutely everybody, right? That how do you have a situation, how can the government announce the outcome of their investigation before they've even started it? That should have been the first warning clue. On top of that, the year before, you had the head of the company's office who drove all of these actions against Alan Hubbard. You had him out in the public forum saying, oh, well, I know we haven't done anything about all the previous finance company collapses, but we're going to get someone sooner or later. There's someone running a Ponzi scheme out there, so we're going to get them, don't you worry. Well, a year later, almost to the day, there's Alan Hubbard being set up and called a fraud before any investigation even starts, and they're calling it the first headline on the first day, they're calling it a Ponzi scheme. I mean, do the math, New Zealanders, right? That should have told you straight away that there was a risk that the guy was being set up here, right? Now, they put him into statutory management, right, and told the public that they were doing this to protect the investors and to protect the taxpayers and all the rest of it, right? Now, this decision to put him in statutory management was made by a committee or a board of people, none of it was ever put before a judge. The final decision was made by Minister Simon Power on the recommendation of a guy called Simon Botherway. Now, Simon Botherway was at the time on the executive of the Securities Commission. His brother, a year before, had been bankrupted by South Canterbury Finance, right, Alan's finance company, because his string of bars, he had 8 or 9 bars that he was running, were put into receivership, owing South Canterbury Finance, I think it was about $8 million. So eventually South Canterbury Finance put him in receivership and ended up having to bankrupt him because they never got the money back. Now, a year later, he sits on the committee that makes the decision to put Alan Hubbard into statutory management, and I actually went to the Ombudsman over that and did a complaint, said that's a conflict of interest, and they ruled that it wasn't. How can that not be a conflict of interest? Right? Here you've got a situation where this guy's saying that he was acting on an anonymous complaint. This guy, by the way, is saying he was acting on an anonymous complaint when he called this committee meeting to determine whether or not they should recommend to Simon Power that Alan Hubbard should be put into statutory management. He failed to declare to the Securities Commission, to Simon Power, or to anyone in that committee that his brother had been bankrupted by Alan Hubbard's company a year before for $8 million. Failed to declare it. And it was only until 4 days after the announcement, after Simon Power announced that he was taking that recommendation and putting Alan into statutory management, 4 days after Simon, by the way, announces, what happened was a reporter discovered this link between his brother and South Canterbury Finance, contacted him with it, confronted him with it, and within an hour, the Security Commission was issuing a public statement trying to downplay the whole thing and saying that, yes, they acknowledged that he hadn't notified the committee and that he hadn't notified Simon Power, but that there was no need to because there wasn't a conflict of interest. I mean, this. What I'm saying is that was the beginning of a dramatic failure on the government's part to even attempt to uphold Alan Hubbard's rights, okay? The guy had rights. New Zealand, understand this. I'm coming at this and always have been coming at this from the point of view that this man was a human being. First and foremost, he might have been a finance company director, but him and his wife were human beings who, on the balance of evidence, after 60 years' contribution to this company, country, should have been given the benefit of the doubt. Absolutely should have been given the benefit of the doubt. When you look at his contribution to their contribution to charity, to all the other things that they did for this country, I still to this day cannot comprehend, even if the government felt that it had to really, you know, step in to do something to protect South Canterbury Finance or whatever. To this day, the enormously loud and clashy and bangy sort of verbal kind of, you know, vitriolic way in which it was done should make everybody be questioning why that was necessary. Because one of the fastest ways to destroy a company and to destroy the value of its assets is to create this kind of hoo-ha about it, right? So that alerted my suspicion straight away. I was thinking, if they're trying to save this company and they're interested in the value and preserving the value of the assets for the investors, why are they making such a huge song and dance and issuing accusations that they aren't even able to prove yet? Why are they announcing that fraud has occurred before they've even started an investigation?
You know, it's because they're fraud. It's probably because they're frauds themselves, and that's what they do.
The only logical explanation for the way they did this was that they were deliberately attempting to drive the value of the assets down.
Well, hold on a second here, because Simon Power was the Justice Minister at the time, wasn't he? And the Westpac Bank does the majority of the banking for the New Zealand government, and weren't they one of the prime receivers of a lot of the assets which were down in value,
so they've got a penny
on the dollars? And on top of that, after this all happens, after Westpac Bank, through no small part of Simon Power, gets a heck of a lot of money for pennies on the dollar, then Simon Power leaves Parliament and becomes the CEO of Westpac.
Mate, it gets worse than that. He became the head of private banking, so that was a cushy job that he got. In my opinion, that was to keep him silent and buy him off. I mean, if you want my honest opinion, I think Simon Power left office because he knew that the ghost of Alan Hubbard was going to haunt him if he tried to stay in power. Because I think he knew that sooner or later the lid was going to come off this tin of worms that John Key and his mates have created, and it's going to portray them, it's going to make Kim.com look like a walk in the park. Right, what they did to Alan Hubbard, and what's happened to those assets since. Now, understand that Simon Power acted on this recommendation without even, of Simon Botherway's committee, without even obtaining a court order, didn't even put it before a judge. So New Zealanders, all the actions that happened against Alan Hubbard and the collapse and the failure of South Canterbury Finance occurred without one court order and one warrant in place, right? All of this was done on the basis of advisers, right? And now, remember, they put him in statutory management to start with only in relation to his private companies, Aorangi and HMF, right? And they said that it was a Ponzi scheme. Now, at the time, I went to the Ombudsman and said there's a conflict of interest here because the guy that made this recommendation was bankrupted by Alan's company, so he shouldn't have been involved in it for a start. And secondly, there's no court order here. I mean, I sent a private email to Simon Power and said to him, mate, you're committing political suicide with this. You're absolutely committing political suicide, at least in the South Island, because people aren't going to forgive you for it. Procedurally, what you're doing here is fundamentally wrong, right? You're not even giving this guy the benefit of the doubt. It was just wrong, and I'll explain how and why after the break.
Yeah, indeed. And also the reason why we're getting Paul on, and even at such short notice, and thank you for getting my text message and coming on, is because of recent attacks upon Alan Hubbard's wife that are completely unfounded, unjustified, and absolutely disgusting. And we'll explain the details of that after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and go respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tino Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where'd you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands.
Misleading our youth
with alcohol, TV contrabands. So kids...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about TV, alcohol, and contrabands. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. We have FCC regulations, so we can't swear, but we can talk about anything else because there's no taboo topics on this network, and I'm very grateful. I must say, so very grateful that I was given this show many years ago, because there's so many activists and good people in this country who don't get, you know, hours to speak their piece that they actually need, because information is not compressed into audio nibbles. You need saturation. You need lots of information in order to make a conclusion about anything. And the mainstream media is just adept at making sure that the sheer quantity of information that exists doesn't get into anybody's ears or eyeball frame of vision. And it's not cool. That's why, incidentally, I've got more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald, more subscribers than New Zealand 3 News, more subscribers than TVNZ, more subscribers than News Talk ZB, more subscribers than Radio Live New Zealand. I've got more subscribers than practically all of them combined. You know why? Because they suck balls. They're useless. They're pathetic. They don't have any clue. They're morons. And on top of that, not only are they freaking stupid and freaking inept, they're also scum. Bad people. Not very nice at all. Don't do the right thing. Don't know their a-hole from their elbow, yo. And my very special guest, Paul Carruthers. Welcome back. We want to talk about Alan Hubbard's wife and recent attacks that she's come under.
Thank you for cutting into my talking time with your rampant self-promotion, Vinny.
My bad.
That's good, mate. I don't disagree with you either. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would have seen Gene Hubbard getting put through the ringer a couple of weeks ago in that court case, and we'll get back onto that. But what I want to do is just go back right back to the beginning and say, look, New Zealand, understand this, where this is really coming from here, and why you should be concerned about this and why you should be asking questions, right? Alan Hubbard and his wife were placed into statutory management, right, on the basis of recommendations made to the Minister Simon Power by very questionable means, for a start, right? The recommendations that were made to Simon Power to put Alan Hubbard into statutory management were based on a 19-page report. Now, understand this. A 19-page report that was submitted to Simon Power, right, based on a two-hour visit, a random visit at Alan Hubbard's office by one person from the company's office and another person who actually ended up being appointed statutory manager. So 2 weeks before Alan was put into statutory management, somebody appeared at his office one day, two guys appeared at his office, one of whom introduced himself as from the company's office, a guy called John McPherson. And he brought the other guy in and just didn't actually tell Alan who he was, right? And said that we're here to do a random inspection of your accounts. Now, Alan said, well, I've got 8 cabinets full of them. I've got 600, you know, or so investor files. And they said, and Alan said, I can even have them brought down on a truck if you want from the main office. And they said, oh, no, we'll just do a cursory inspection. Give us a handful from the A section. So he literally did. He got them about half a dozen files from the A section of all of his investor files. And they sat there and they did a two-hour, right, audit of these 6 files, right? And they went away and they wrote a 19-page report on that accusing him of fraud. Right now, this is based on less than 1% inspection of his total investor files of 600 or so files. They looked at a handful of about 6 of them. They went away and they wrote a 19-page report recommending to the Minister Power or to the Securities Commission that he was guilty of fraud and should be put into statutory management. Now, that he should have been investigated for fraud and put into statutory management. Right now, this was done by the staff of the company's office, and they never told Alan Hubbard who the other person was. Well, the other person turned out 2 weeks later, or several weeks later, the other person walked through Alan Hubbard's door after having been appointed statutory manager. So this guy was not introduced to Alan Hubbard. They never told him who he was. He was allowed to come into Alan's office and basically write a report for the government, accusing Alan of fraud, and suggesting that he should be put into statutory management, and then he got appointed statutory manager. And he's made nearly $5 million in fees out of it ever since. And all of this was done without a court order or a warrant. So that's the first point that New Zealanders should be challenging this whole process, right? Because this could happen to anybody. That's the point. If the government is prepared to ignore procedure to this degree, basically what they did was they set this guy up. I mean, here was the head of the company's office a year before saying, we're going to get somebody, there's a Ponzi scheme out there, you make no mistake about it, we will do something, investors, you know, you poor retired people out there, we can't get your money back, but we'll take one of these people down somehow. And a year later, there they were basically setting the guy up, right? I mean, that's exactly what it was. It was a setup. It cannot be viewed in any other way, right? How do you have a situation where the guy gets to write the report, effectively appointing himself to a job that gets him $5 million in fees, right? With no court order. How does that work? I mean, that, what you have to understand, New Zealand, is that means if you own a business, the government can send somebody along, a private company, a private accounting firm, to come along, audit your books, decide that you're insolvent, give you no say in the matter, and shut you down and take all of your assets away, and they don't have to provide a court order. And not only that, the person who writes the report, the accountant, can actually get a fee, to get a commission for selling all your assets. Right? And they don't even have to justify that. You should be questioning this. So this is the situation Alan was put in, and then he was accused of fraud and put into statutory management, right? Now,
Can I say something?
They put him into stat...
I just want to say that this is something I've noticed about the New Zealand government. It is actually a criminal government run by criminals. And what they do is they prey on successful people in order to destroy them, particularly entrepreneurs. And I've seen this happen a number of times with people in New Zealand who have made their money honestly, and they simply get badly shafted by the authorities and have all their wealth confiscated off them. This happened to a man named Chris Wardle, who was doing about a $30 to $40 million real estate deal that got stolen off him, and he went again threatened by the authorities and all of that kind of thing. Alan Hubbard, of course. And Vince Seymour, who was screwed over by a guy named Michael Stiassny, who's a personal friend of the Prime Sinister. And I also met another guy just randomly one time who had nearly $1 million ship that was fully decked out with all this Hollywood memorabilia and stuff like that. I was going to use it for movies. And the cops came on and burnt the ship. Okay, so it's like in this country, if you become incredibly successful, really successful, and you start to threaten any of the big dogs, they come and they steal your stuff. Okay, it's just like the mafia.
Okay, look, what happened here, I mean, look, they put him into statutory management with his private companies, and they said that he was running a Ponzi scheme with them, right? And they said that his paperwork was, I mean, whenever I run into people about this, they always go, oh, yeah, wasn't he that old guy that was running the finance company? And, oh, didn't he kind of lose it? And there was all, it was a bit sad, really, you know. I think they were pretty hard on him. I don't think they should have treated him the way he did. But at the end of the day, he had lost it, hadn't he? You know, he'd lost all that paperwork. Here's the thing. So they said there was all this missing paperwork, and they tried to portray him as, you know, running the company. I mean, the story just kept changing. First of all, it was senility, then it was a Ponzi scheme, and then it was missing paperwork, and then he just sort of ran it in an old-fashioned way. And they just made it up as they went along, basically, and sort of people went along with the story and formed their impressions based on the headlines they were reading. None of it was true. That's the ridiculous part about it, is if you went to his offices, there was 15 computers lined up with girls doing data entry furiously all the time, right, for a start. And then 2 years down the track now, they've just announced recently that they found 70 boxes of information they didn't know they had all along. When they took all of his stuff away, when they put him into statutory management investing, they took 70 boxes of information away, and they just conveniently found them again after 2 years. So after this guy's dead and everybody thinks he's lost it and he was just running his company on handshakes and no paperwork, all of a sudden 70 boxes of paperwork turn up. The very paperwork that he could have used to defend himself against all these accusations, and on top of that, the money's there all along, and nobody's asking any questions. Nobody in the media, in the mainstream media, is going back over this and saying, "Hang on a minute, this story's done 180 degree turn compared to how it first started. Shouldn't somebody be asking questions? I mean, at the end of the day, a man and his wife have been completely denied of their rights here. Shouldn't we be looking at this?" But nobody considers it important. I think that the New Zealanders just sort of accepted that, well, it was $1.5 billion of taxpayer money, so, you know, at the end of the day, it was a lot of money. So, you know, we just really... Yes, I know it was a bit messy what they did to him, but we really shouldn't be asking any questions because it was a lot of money. And I'm saying, rubbish. You people have swallowed what you've been read in the newspapers, what you've read in the newspapers, which has all been garbage. Very, very few people out there have taken the time to study the facts of the situation, because if you did, you would find very quickly that you should not be listening to what John Key has said about this. This is what gobsmacks me. Why is it that people are not asking any questions, including the opposition parties, Labour and Greens, then the media as well, they're not asking any questions, right, about the process that was applied to Alan Hubbard. And yet everybody's busy having a go at John Key, right, for Kim.com, for Sky City,
But John Key's pants have been consistently ended up around his ankles on a whole range of issues since Alan Hubbard, right, where he's been caught flat-out lying, flat-out ignoring proper process, flat-out trashing people's rights, OK, Kim.com and other people's rights, flat-out misusing the law, flat-out abusing his power, and not one person in the media has gone back and said, stop, hang on, if he's going to do all of that, right, after Alan Hubbard, why should we believe him about what he said about Alan Hubbard? It gobsmacks me that everybody is basically, it seems to me that New Zealand is basically saying, oh, well, yeah, it was $1.5 billion, but, you know, that's okay, we can let it go. And it doesn't matter that a guy's rights were completely destroyed in the process. I mean, what is wrong with you people? You know, I'm watching all these Labour people out there going, they're tearing their hair out, trying to find a way to you know, they can't understand why they can't find a chink in John Key's armour, or you just can't see. Let me spell it out to you, right? Read my lips. Alan Hubbard is the chink in John Key's armour. Understand? If you really want to, if you really want to expose John Key for what he really is, and this government for what it really is, right? Go and demand an inquiry into. Go to your MP and demand an inquiry into South Canterbury Finance. If there was a judicial inquiry into South Canterbury Finance, John Key would be history. I'll absolutely guarantee it. He would not make the next election.
I think that also on top of that, what would be necessary is a full investigation in order to get rid of these people within parliamentary services, treasury, and so on and so forth, the ombudsman. Because what I find is interesting is that when we've got a corrupt governor like John Key or something of that nature, I reckon he's corrupt personally.
Mate, listen to
and
this.
And then you get rid of those. The only reason why they're capable of acting corrupt when they're in that position is because there are staff members who keep retained in the governmental system, regardless of which party is in power.
They are just raping the taxpayer, these people, by even turning up to work. They infuriate me. Okay, but listen to this. How long have I got to encapsulate what I'm trying to say here?
2 minutes.
Okay, listen, New Zealanders. A citizen of New Zealand had his assets seized and sold out from under him by the Crown on the basis of accusations alone made by ministers or politicians. And the media and their friends in the media. Not one court order or one warrant exists to justify any of the actions taken against this person or the sale of all of their assets. And they have convinced you that this man is guilty of fraud, and therefore you shouldn't be questioning the fact that they need to use $1.5 billion of your taxpayer money to subsidise the losses incurred by the sale of his assets to their friends at massively discounted prices. So you've been convinced this guy was a fraud, so you're just not questioning any of this process. But I'm telling you, there's no court order to warrant any of it. John Key is so exposed on this that if you understood how exposed John Key is on this issue, you would understand why Alan Hubbard is dead. Because he was due in a courtroom 3 days after he was killed to defend himself against all of these accusations, and his evidence would have nailed John Key to the mast. And that was 5 weeks before the last election, right? John Key would have been exposed in a worse situation than he's found himself with Kim.com 5 weeks before the last election, right? And Alan Hubbard died mysteriously before he could actually get his evidence into a courtroom to prove John Key and his mates wrong. Now, do the math. It's not rocket science, right? His death makes John Key luckier than a lotto winner, right? Mm. And none of you people are asking the questions. And I've come to the conclusion... No, I'm not going to make any conclusions. I don't want to attack New Zealanders, but you people need to wake up.
Stop listening to the mainstream media at the very least for a start. I mean, it's like, if your mind is toxic, I can assure you it's because toxins are being injected into your brain deliberately by the mainstream media. Switch them off. Switch on the Vinnie Eastwood show daily. Get some decent information out there from people who actually know what the heck they're talking about and do the research. We'll be right back after the break. We'll be right back after the break of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Alone against your man.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about standing alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, computer god communism. And my very special guest is Paul Carruthers. Now, we only have a short segment here, Paul, and we've got a lot of information to get out. We need to talk about Alan Hubbard's wife and the attack on her, which was the very reason why we had the show in the first place. If you could divulge that before we go to break again, that'd be nice.
Okay. Mate, a couple of weeks ago, Alan's wife got, after 2 years after the accident that that resulted in his death, she went to court a couple of weeks ago, and effectively, it's after what appears to me to be a rather weak police investigation, in which they did find the other driver at fault. That all got thrown into question in the courtroom when all of a sudden, you know, the other driver. There's something very suspicious about this accident, and it needs to be investigated, because for it to have ended up in the mess that court case turned into a couple of weeks ago suggests to me that the police investigation was weak. Nobody's very clear on the facts. It shouldn't be that inconclusive after 2 years. Do you know what I mean? 2 years down the track, the police have had plenty of time to do their investigation thoroughly. There's a lot of question marks about this guy's conduct, the other driver. He's saying that he was driving from Dunedin to Nelson for a long weekend to visit his children. Now, that's almost 1,100 kilometre journey, 1,000 kilometre journey. Why was he towing a concrete mixer? Why was he towing a concrete mixer all the way from Dunedin to Nelson, right, to visit his children and to then tow it all the way back to Dunedin again? Doesn't make sense. Certainly added a lot of weight to his vehicle, but that's about the only reason why he would have needed it, right? Unless he intended to concrete his driveway over the long weekend that he was visiting his kids, which I doubt very much. So there's all these unanswered questions about this accident. I think it was reprehensible after what she's been put through, that Alan's widow's been put through, that she effectively got the blame by his lawyer, right? There's all I can say to the public of New Zealand is there should be a thorough investigation into this whole matter, right? And that includes, I tell you what I want to know. I want to see where this guy lives now. I want to see who owned the property beforehand, how he ended up in ownership of it, because I've been told that he lives on a farm and Bill English's electorate or somewhere around there. So his residence has shifted. I've been told that the farm used to belong to Alan Hubbard. I don't know if that's true. You know, I don't want to appear like too much of a conspiracy theorist, but these are the things I've consistently been told by other people, and I'm still trying to piece it together. There's more questions than answers about this accident, including why did it even take 2 years to go to court in the first place? And why is the outcome so inconclusive when it was a pretty clear-cut, head-on, frontal accident, okay? So this whole thing just reeks of a cover-up. It reeks of people scrambling in all sorts of directions to try to make it appear a certain way. But the problem is it's a rotting, stinking mess. The whole situation is a rotting mess, and the public should be demanding an inquiry into it. Because $1.5 billion of your money, New Zealanders, was used to subsidise the losses incurred by the sale of this man's assets to people known to the Prime Minister and up the other decision makers in this process. Those assets were sold at massively discounted prices and rates, right? And you were convinced that your money was needed to subsidise the losses, right? Because this man was a fraud. But they've never proven it. He's never had a trial. So what I'm asking you to do, New Zealanders, understand this. Are you saying, with your silence, your unwillingness to take any notice of this, are you suggesting that you're willing to take John Key's word for it, that Alan Hubbard was guilty of fraud? Because that is effectively what's happening here. If you do nothing about this, then you are effectively saying that we should all just take John Key and Bill English's word for it, that Alan Hubbard was guilty of fraud without a court order, without a trial, and that what they needed $1.5 billion of your money to subsidise the sale of the sale of his assets to people that they, it would appear, on cursory inspection, it would appear that people they knew, right? And this man never had a trial. So you've got to take John Key's word for it that he was guilty. Now, if you're willing to do that, knock yourself out. But personally, I think you're mad. I've been trying for 2.5 years to make people aware of this because I'm personally not willing to do that. I'm not willing to sit by and watch the complete devastation of this man and his wife's rights,
right? And that is first and foremost what matters to me, because he was 84 years old. If we're going to start treating our elderly people this way, especially when they put a lifetime of service into this country to the degree that they did, we're just going to trash them and turn a blind eye to everything that they did for us, for this country, for the development of this country, just because John Key says he's a fraud. We don't even need a trial to prove it, right? And we're all just going to sit here passively and let John Key rip up $1.5 billion of our money, right, selling off this guy's assets, and we don't even need a trial. There's something horribly wrong with this situation, and I'm gobsmacked that people aren't asking more questions about it, right? It's just wrong. Now, you know, I'll give you an example. South Canterbury Finance, I'll give you one example of how those assets have been stripped and given away and your money's been used to subsidise it. Braybrook Subdivision in Ashburton, right? Valued. Now, that was a South Canterbury Finance asset. That subdivision was partly completed when it was put into receivership. That subdivision was valued conservatively at between $6.5 and $8.4 million, somewhere around there, right? $6.5 million for a fire sale, $8.5 million if you just sat on the market and hope for the best, right? But the estate, the three valuations that I've seen showed that they were saying between $6.5 and $7.4 million to get rid of it quickly. Now, Alan Hubbard himself confirmed for me that that asset, the Braybrook subdivision, they owed Westpac $3.1 million on it. Okay? So it was conservatively worth $6.5 million. They owed $3.1. So in Alan Hubbard's own words, it was a good asset, right? So they could still come out with a profit if they had to fire sale. The receivers sold that to a related party for $1.8 million. $1.8 million. And your taxpayer money was used to pay Westpac out the balance of the loan. So tax, more than $1 million, $1.2, $1.3 million of taxpayer money was used to pay out Westpac for the shortfall between what was owed to them on that land and what it was sold for, right? When it was valued at three times that much, and nobody is asking any questions, right?
This is like the financial version of looting, like full on.
It is absolutely. Alan Hubbard was not put in. Alan Hubbard was subjected to statutory rape by this government. He was statutorily raped. And now you've got the situation where his two lawyers that were appointed to represent him at the beginning, one of them has been proven to be the second most influential person in New Zealand with swipe card access to Parliament, and the other one accepted the job at the end of last year as Crown solicitor. So the Crown nabbed him out of that law firm after Alan Hubbard was dead and it was all quietly went away. He was offered the job and accepted the job of Crown solicitor. So he's never going to speak against the government on Alan Hubbard's behalf now, is he? Right? He's never going to give evidence. So Alan Hubbard's defence is just shot to pieces, basically. He's never going to get any defence post-mortem, right, after his death. Because the very people who took millions of dollars to defend him and his widow against this situation basically appear to be working for the... Well, one of them is working for the government now, OK? So the trashing of these people's rights is just disturbing. I mean, the afternoon that he was put into statutory management, Alan Hubbard was punched in the head. Now, his secretary is a witness to that. She was fired. He was punched in the head by one of his colleagues. They called a special meeting that afternoon on the 20th of June at their offices, and they called Alan Hubbard and his wife in, and one of his colleagues lost his temper with Alan for being put into statutory management and embarrassing them with that situation. Alan got whacked around the back of the head. Now, Alan confirmed that for me himself, and his secretary has confirmed it for me as well. His wife can't confirm it anymore because she's suffering from acute memory loss now, right? Probably since the accident, as a result of the accident, so she can't really be reliable in that respect. But his secretary certainly can. She took them to the employment court. She was led back to her office and forced to clear her desk and told that she couldn't come back because it was now crime scene, right? And she took them to the employment court and they settled the day before it went to employment court. And she was made to sign a confidentiality clause saying that she basically. I think she told me that the wording was down-tuned to acknowledge that the guy, his hand touched Alan's head. Now, when I asked Alan about that directly, he confirmed for me that the guy punched him in the back of the head. Now, Alan wasn't prepared to press charges in that situation, but that's just one example of what this 80-plus-year-old man had to go through as a result. All of this was because it was about money, right? And all I'm saying is to the guy that hit him, you disgust me. You are scum. If you ever see this, you are scum. He was 84 years old. What, 83 years old? What planet do you live on? How can you justify it? How is money that important to you that it would justify hitting this man? Right? And New Zealanders, is money so, are we so obsessed with money that we're completely prepared to turn a blind eye to the absolute devastation of these people's rights, okay? Because it was about money. Because John Key said that it was about $1.5 billion, so that the ends justify the means. I'm saying they don't. New Zealand, you got it wrong. Ask the questions. Demand an inquiry.
Mm.
This is a travesty of justice.
You know, justice is a hard thing to find, and in my opinion, it's an artificial thing that humans have created in order to make themselves feel better about it. And I don't know about you, Paul. In fact, I do know about you, Paul, but I feel very, very bad. Like, in my guts, it feels like it's eating away at me to know that this injustice continues. And it would have to be an absolute part of effort on all of our parts in this entire country in order to try and expose this and try and get some justice to maintain some form of equilibrium in this country. We've only got about 10 seconds, Paul, so unfortunately we're going to have to leave it there and bring you on again sometime soon. Paul Carruthers, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after the break.